expressions to make the regular expressions that to match the patterns of text.
Okay. So now, go ahead.
One other, well, a couple of other, sorry, a couple of other meta characters. One is the caret, which is shift 6 on your keyboard, is that means beginning of line.
Okay.
And a dollar sign means end of line. So that you can say, okay, I want to match ABC, but only if it occurs at the start of a line. Or I want a Y, but only if it's at the very end of a line.
Uh-huh.
The expression for the Y at the end would be Y dollar.
Okay.
The dollar sign says, okay, this has to be occurring at the end of the line, and the very last character.
And caret ABC would be at the beginning of the line.
Yes.
Okay. And that is the one exception that you've given so far on the regular expressions where the
qualifier,
thank you, yeah, is at the beginning. The rest of them are at the end. Is that correct?
So far.
Okay.
Yes. In fact, as now that you bring it to my attention, the caret seems to be about the only one I can recall at the moment that does come before all others come after.
Okay, and again, if we either type an info or a man page on regexp, it'll give us all the regular expressions and examples.
Yep.
So that's real good. Now, you mentioned the dash I in RM.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference, because some folks may get confused when they look at the screen and they say at the info and they look at all this stuff and they'll see, well, that's a dash. Is that a regular expression or a switch? Let's talk about switches and then compare them with regular expressions and how they differ.
Okay.
This is for beginners now.
A switch is a modifier to the behavior of a command. Like the dash I makes it inquire before it actually does a remove. And there are other switches for other commands. I don't recall dash I being used as inquiry in any other command. Like the CPIO has a dash I, but that's for input.
Okay. Now, what is CPIO?
CPIO is an archiving program. It was written to be able to go between Unix and non-Unix systems. The original archiving software was AR.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quickly superseded by TAR, which is tape archiving
mm-hmm.
software. But TAR would only work with Unix and would only work with certain types of CPUs. Because if you wrote a TAR file on a VAX, it could not be read in on a data general, for example.
I will be darned. Because of the processor, Ed, or what?
No, the TAR format did not specify the order that bytes were written out in, and therefore the integers are stored in a different order between VAXs and data generals, and between VAXs and x86.
Wow.
So TAR was not portable between all of them, but CPIO was. And then later on, the GNU folks took over TAR, and they began to say, okay, when it's GNU TAR, we are going to specify the order of the bytes, so it will be able to exchange a GNUtar file from all these various machines.
The dash I tells it, okay, then you got to specify which machine it's going to go to.
No.
Or is that just the input file?
Because the byte order is in the specification of the design of the program.
Okay.
It's sort of like your network card can talk to a Mac Apple machine because the network byte order was defined early on as part of the spec. And there is what's called network byte order that it may or may not be the natural order of storing things when a integer is stored in C. They go down in a certain order, but network order might be different. They can swap in for in. 1, 2, 3, 4 becomes 4, 3, 2, 1, or they can swap sort of half by half. So
mm-hmm.
you have 1, 2, 4, 3.
Okay. Kind of a rude sort of encryption.
Sort of.
Okay.
Yes. And getting the particular the swapping of which, whether you have to swap 16-bit values or 8-bit values, and when you go up to 32-bit, how you have to swap to the bytes within those to get the 4 bytes of a 32-bit integer into the correct order is sort of like a cryptic thing that fortunately the networking people have worked out very fast algorithms for handling that for us, and it's all in a library. You just call it and it puts everything in network byte order, and it may on some CPUs not have to do anything at all.
Wow, these people are geniuses, you know, Ed. They're geniuses. It's a good thing we don't have to do any of that. Nothing to get done with it.
Right.
Okay, well, back to our regular expression. So the switch is a modifier of a command at the command line that we give it. And the regular expression is the search parameter of for files and text within the file.
Yeah. For example, rep command, the dash I means ignore case. So lowercase letters and uppercase letters both match the same pattern.
Okay, that makes sense.
Some of the other switches are available in grep, for at least on Linux, are the capital A for around, and you can say --A3, and it will get you 3 lines before and 3 lines after the string that you're matching.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm sorry. The capital C gets before and after. The capital A gets after only, and the capital B gets before only.
Okay.
I don't make use of those very often, but when you need them, they're very handy to have.
Now, one of the things I will make a note on is that being that Unix is case sensitive, folks, listen carefully, because if Ed says it's a capital A or a capital C, please use the expression as he gives it, because Unix is case sensitive.
In fact, if they use lowercase c rather than uppercase C, lowercase C causes grep to report how many lines match the pattern. They count the matches.
That.
So you might find a lowercase C will return 1,400 out of your 10,000-line file.
Ooh, that'd be quite a few. We don't want to be doing that. That would take. You'd have to put a less than more on the end of there, wouldn't you, in order to, you know.
Yes. Uh-huh. Or capture to a file.
To a file, and of course we want to get into that later on. Now, by the way, another good use of switches is when you use the GCC compiler and you're going to compile a piece of source code. The dash O will send the result to a file that you specify. So that would instead of going to a.out, you'd have to use the dash O option so that your file would have the proper name that you needed.
Yes. Otherwise, you have to, after the compile, move or rename the a.out to the name you want.
Yeah, and that's just a lot of problem.
The dash little o, lowercase o, gets you the file output under the name you want without going through the extra step. The dash capital O invokes the optimizer for the compiler.
That makes it small or what, Ed? I'm sorry. I was just trying.
The optimizer, by default, I think, optimizes for it. Sort of a mix of speed and space.
Oh, okay.
You can tell it to make things as small as possible, even if at the sacrifice of speed, but it will ordinarily try to make things faster, whether it makes them a little larger or not.
Uh-huh.
And then there are the capital O also can have a numeric after it, one or two, and that invokes additional levels of optimization.
Okay, well, I think that that's for fairly advanced folks, and I think that gives you a good example of switches. And by the way, folks, when you do your man page, pay attention to the switches, pay attention to how they look, because that's going to be what's going to save you a lot of sleepless hours when you're trying to compile your code. So anything else on regular expressions, Ed, or have we pretty well covered this area?
Well, without having actual text before us that we could explore which matches and which fails to match, it's difficult to address regular expressions beyond just naming the meta characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think if we go in and look at the man page on that, I think there are enough examples one could get started, I think. So,
if you have a BSD system or get the BSD games,
mm-hmm,
which have been ported to Linux, there is in there a command, I believe it's called learn. And learn has, amongst the things it can do, is learn about ED. Well, ED is the original regular expression editor for Unix.
Okay.
And so it can give you practice, and the learn program presents you with text or a question that says, what do you do to match this? And then they have an evaluator that uses regular expressions to look at your answer and decide if that's if it would accomplish what they want accomplished.
By the way, just for grins, we had a Windows machine, I think, just go crazy over here. I think they've had to reboot it again. Go ahead, Ed. Oh, well, that would explain why it had to reboot. It's about 20 years old. All right. Go ahead, Ed. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I had to poke a little fun at the Windows box there.
That's all right. but I did lose track of where I was.
We were talking about the fact that there isn't, we don't have any text, and you were telling us about the Learn program in the games that were ported over from BSD.
Yeah.
And then you were saying you could match the it would give you text, and you would answer the question as to how you would match the text.
Or it will say something like, transform this text into this text with a single substitute command. And then you would put in the regular expression on the left-hand side of the substitute and the corresponding text you want on the right-hand side to accomplish that transformation.
So you treat it like an equation?
Yes.
Great. Yes. Great.
Yep. That's how the editors like ED and SED and VI all do their substitution. They have the S invokes it, and then often the slash is used as a delimiter. And the delimiter can be any character, just as long as it does not appear inside the text you're trying to match.
Okay.
And that's why it's handy to be able to redefine it, because if, for example, what you're trying to work on has slashes in it, it's a path name to a file,
mm-hmm.
then using, for example, equal instead makes a whole lot of sense on the as a delimiter, because equals do not often appear within paths.
No, the only time I've ever seen equals in paths was in DOS.
I've never worked with DOS, so I don't.
Yeah, path equals or path space C colon backslash in the path.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very interesting stuff, Ed. So now you got me curious. I'll have to go home and start playing around a little bit here, because I think that's where a lot of us, you hear the old thing, oh, Linux is just too hard to learn. And if we can learn regular expressions, I think that will help a lot of our shell command, our shell programming. And I appreciate your help on those, because now we can start doing a little shell programming. Other than the man pages and the info, are there good books on the subject? Any shell programming book that's of reasonable quality? Would that give a detailed description of regular expressions? Or is that kind of an arcane art, kind of a voodoo type magic thing that you have to?
Well, there are several books on at various levels, from beginner to intermediate. I don't know of any at the expert level that deal with regular expressions. The expert ones assume you know regular expressions already and just sort of go on past that and start actually using them without explaining.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Kernighan and Ritchie's C book, you know. We assume you already know how to program. Well, it's still sitting on the shelf, and I'm still having to go through and learn, you know, how to program in C. It's not easy for an old guy like me to learn to program in C, I'll tell you.
Well, until I got involved with a company whose entire software, or most of the software that we distribute to the customers, is written in C, I had not done C programming for over 10 years. I mostly wind up, or had before this, done my programming at the command line, the interpreter, the shell of Unix or Linux, using utilities like grep and sed and tr
Mm-hmm.
TR, by the way, is for translating character one character group to another character group.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you could, with TR, do lowercase a dash lowercase m to, or dash z would be better, a through z, and then space and uppercase a dash uppercase z, and that will translate the lowercase characters to upper and make your entire file uppercase.
Ooh, that would be okay.
Well, that can save you some work sometime. Another thing that you can do with, because not all commands take the dash I like grep does for ignoring case,
mm-hmm.
is to change the entire file to a single case, do something on it as a single case so that the upper and lower case are both handled without having to duplicate all the transformations that you want to do in their lowercase and their uppercase versions.
Ah, okay. And then you could go through the file and do string searches and correct what you need to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And then very often you can convert back to lowercase or uppercase appropriately. That you may not want to do the transformation of your entire text. For example, if you lowercase the file, it takes all the uppercase characters out, and then later you recognize where sentences start and say, okay, uppercase those and uppercase a few names that are proper names that I know need to be uppercased, and a few three-letter acronyms, they all become uppercase, and you can pretty much recover the original file with transformations that you did while it was all converted to lowercase.
And by the way, just to make it easier for everybody, it's easier to convert the file to lowercase and then do the uppers, because there aren't as many uppers as there are lowers.
Yes.
Yeah,
thinking like a programmer.
Okay, well, that's just what I was listening here, and thank you, Ed, for telling me that, because now I'm beginning to think, and we'll probably drag the old C programmer's book out and see if I can do something with it. But it probably would be better if I do some shell programming first, since it's more of an intuitive thing.
It is an interpreted language, and therefore it is much more interactive. You don't have to wait for it to compile to get the results of your shell commands.
And that would certainly get me thinking logically then.
And it will shorten up your learning time.
Oh, it will?
Yes.
Well, thank you, and I've got the tool. I've got a Linux box. It's got Debian on there. It's got the Bash shell, and so I need to get some material on the Bash shell, then, don't
yes.
I?
Yes.
Okay. Is there stuff on the net about the Bash shell? I imagine
yes, there is. And there's quite a few examples in the Info Bash as well.
Oh, so if I go to Info Bash or Man Bash. They'll tell me.
Man Bash doesn't tell you a whole lot. It okay. just tells you the variables that you can configure or change the behavior of Bash, whereas the info page does include many more examples, I believe.
Okay, so we want to do the info page on the Bash.
Yes.
And it will also tell me about the regular expressions that would be used in Bash.
Yes.
Okay.
And within the shell programming, when file names are expanded using wildcarding or mm-hmm. globbing is what they call it. The reason for calling globbing is lost in history. I believe it was somebody wrote a library and he said, oh, we're going to group all these file names together using patterns, and it would just be a big glob. So they call it globbing.
Well, great.
And that's my suspicion.
I'll tell you, Linux is a funny thing. It's not quite as hung up as the Microsoft folks are. Boy, they're just all serious all the time, and the Linux folks, they just have fun with what they do. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I have heard from beginners, is that they find that Linux is meant to be fun, that it is a constant learning experience. Nobody ever learns all of it, not even Linus.
And really?
Yeah. Linus knows about the Linux kernel, but Linus does not know all the intricacies of, like, the various MP3 players and all the other thousands of commands.
That's unbelievable. I mean, you'd think a guy like Linus Pauling would have it all up here, and he doesn't.
I'm thinking of Linus Torvalds, the originator of Linux.
Who did I say, Linus Pauling?
Yes.
Yes, I did. You can tell it's been a long day today. I'm sorry, Ed. Linus Torvalds is correct. But it's fascinating, and I appreciate the time you've taken, and hopefully this will be archived. I can go back over it again and listen, because I think we've hit on something. If people want to learn to program, start with shell programming. Is that what you're basically advising?
Yes.
Yep. Well,
it
great.
It seems it should be interactive and quite fast to go, and you can learn programming structure. Bash allows you to do for loops and while and if, then, else if. And so, case statements. And
well, see, that was the problem I had with C. I tried if and else.
Yeah.
And I tried, now, for wasn't so bad because it's a looper and it worked fine. But boy, when I tried an else or an if, it seemed like I could never get the ifs, the statements, you know. It would skip over the statement because, and I'd ask my friend, well, where in the world? He'd say, well, where'd you put the right brace? And I'd show him, well, put it here. Well, I never could understand why the right brace had to go there. And I would invariably try putting the braces in this spot and that spot, and it still would skip over the part. Or what I would do is if, you know, if this condition was met, then you go to the next line that would say that. You know, it assumes the then part of the statement, but it I never could get an if. It would skip over the if, or run the if, and it wouldn't run anything else. You know, just drive me crazy.
I think maybe, yeah, it was failing to get through the if. You had a condition that was causing it to fail when you weren't expecting it to fail.
Right, and I could never and you couldn't, you know, it would never give you an error message. It would just go through there and run the parts of the program that were not in the if statement, just drive me up a tree.
And unfortunately, Bash will do the same kind of thing. It will just say, okay, here's an if, and no, I'm not going to do the part you say because the if condition was not true.
Let's talk about if conditions not being true. How do I know the if condition is not true?
Well, with Bash, you can give it a dash X, which will say, show me each line as you're about to execute it. Show me what you're seeing as the Bash interpreter so I can see what variable expansion this if came out to. So I can see that the string Charlie is not equal to Diane.
Okay.
And so then I can say, oh, well, then I have to go back up in my program somewhere and find out where I assigned Diane and change that to Charlie, because when I get down to this if statement, it's I have Charlie, not Diane.
Okay, and so when it shows, and it'll go through every line and show me what it comes out as.
Yes.
Now, would it be better for me to send that to a file?
Yes, you can do that as well.
And then I would just call that file, bash,
trace, or
just anything that I use, and I can reuse that file.
Yes.
Just take, and I would delete the file each time.
Actually, with Unix, what you do is greater than file name, and the greater than before the command begins executing truncates the file to zero length, so it starts over again for you.
So I could actually run a script each time, put together a little script that would, after I write the program or whatever, then I just run this little script and it would actually go in there and send the file to the send the output to the file. Or does
yes.
it does it actually do that when it runs the when I run the script, I would just put the greater than and the file name at the end.
Yes, on the command line, and then you can, when you're all done with the debugging, you can let it go without diverting into a file.
Okay, now the other question I have is, do I write it in my favorite editor like Emacs or VI or...
Whatever editor you like that will handle text.
You can
use Pico or Nano if that's what you want to do.
Okay, well I don't think I have Nano. They say Nano is better.
If you have a Linux system, you have Nano.
Okay.
Nano is the GNU clone of Pico.
Okay.
Pico was started as part of the Pine email system. And then the editing portion was separated out and became Pico. Well, because of the licensing difficulties, the GNU folks wanted to write their own so they could have it under GPL. And they called it Nano.
Aha.
Which is, I think, when you're talking about prefixes of like picofarads and nanofarads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Means much.
Which is larger?
Pico.
Pico is larger than nano?
I'm sorry. No, pico is smaller.
Okay.
Yeah, pico goes second, millisecond, microsecond, nanosecond, picosecond.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Those are metric, by the way. 10 to the minus 6 is micro. 10 to the minus 12 is pico.
I see.
10 to the minus
9?
9 is nano.
Okay. Been a while since I've thought of
Okay. By the way, it is 23 minutes after the hour. Let's take a short break and give Ed a little bit of a break here. We've been going at it for, oh gosh, a better part of half an hour here.
Okay.
And people along the line, if you are carrying it, we'll give you a chance to say who you are along the line. This is the Kansas City Linux User Group. My name is Craig Martin. Our engineer is Mike Moore, and with me is Ed Allen. We've spent a long time here in Allen's alcove, you might say. And Ed is the editor of Ed's Tips on the Kansas City Linux User Group webpage, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But I want to finish with Ed. He's been talking to us for a long time. Want to allow him to visit with a few people. Let's just summarize, Ed. Do you have anything else before we summarize? And Ed has gone.
No.
Oh, okay.
I was just across the room here.
Oh, okay. I'm just asking, do you have anything else before we summarize on what we've gone through today?
No, I think we've had a pretty full evening this time.
Yes, we have. So let me just summarize, make sure I've got everything right. First of all, let's start with the shells. If you're going to start programming in it at all, it's best to use what Ed calls an interpreter rather than a compiler, because you get instant gratification, and we all like that. That's why we buy candy bars out of the vending machine and billions of dollars go down the drain. Number two, regular expressions. Be careful that regular expressions, that you study them carefully. If you can learn, the BSD package has a learn tool that allows us to learn about regular expressions. If you don't, then regexp is a good man page or info source on your Linux box, and all the Linux boxes probably have that on it. The difference between a regular expression and a switch. A switch modifies a command. A regular expression modifies a search string. In programs like grep, you would have the dash I for ignore case, and you'd have the dot star for any number of a given character and a question. The modifiers, with the exception of the caret, which says look at the beginning of the line for the string ABC or XYZ, caret is the only one that is at the beginning of the search string placed into grep. If you want any of the others, the meta character goes at the end. For example, the star, the question mark.
Or the plus.
Thank you, Ed. This is the reason we had you go through that. And if you're looking for shell programming to start, you can certainly go to the info pages there. And also the info pages and the man pages. What else did I miss, Ed? Covered quite a bit there.
I'm still thinking about Pico and Nano here.
Oh, okay. Do you have anything on Pico or Nano before we leave?
No, I don't. I'm just remembering old things about the numbering prefixes and which I guess it, no, not decade. It's, well, which, what precision.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. The first one is, of course, 1. 10 to the first, or 10 to the 0. 10 to the 0 would be 1. Let's visualize it metrically. Let's take the meter, okay, because we can visualize a meter. A meter is about as long as this mic boom, maybe half again. Yeah.
Maybe your arm.
Yeah, maybe your arm. The arm is about 3 feet long. So say maybe from your chest. Okay, so now we have the meter. That's 1, or 10 to the 0. 10 to the minus 1 is desa. Desa, D-E-S-I. Okay. Then centa is 10 to the minus 2, or 1/100th centimeter. It's about 2.54 of them equal an inch. There are 30 centimeters in a foot, by the way, or about 300 millimeters. Okay. Milla, or actually desa, then we have centa, thousandth, millimeter. We talk about millimeter wavelengths in astronomy. There are 300 of them in a foot. There are 30 of them, a little less than 30 of them in an inch, because they're actually 12 inches in a foot. That's milla. Then below milla, we start going into micro. There are others, but I don't remember them. It's been a long day. Micro is 10 to the minus 6, or micro means there are a million, and it's also called a micron. Yeah, a million portions of the meter, microns, or micrometer. I like the micron better. It's an easier, shorter word. Then after micro, or we have 10 to the minus 9, that is nano. nanometer. That's a billionth of a meter. And then a trillionth is, that might be tera, isn't it? Where is tera? Now you got me bum-fuzzled here, Ed. Tera is, okay, there's a better way to do it. Okay, megabyte is a million. Gigabyte is a billion. Terabyte is a trillion, and that's actually a thousand, that's billion, so I'm going the other way. So pico is the same as trillionth. That's it. Finally. Whew. Gosh, my head's spinning. Okay, so micro, then pico. Okay, M before P.
Okay, and I seem to recall from my electricity days that pico is also a micro.
That would be 10 to the minus 12.
And isn't that what a pico is?
Yes, so nano would have to be 10 to the minus 9, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Ah, finally. It, you know, two heads are better than one, aren't they, Ed? Okay, well, Ed, I thank you so much. I'm going to go home. I'm all excited now, fired up. Going to go home and play some shell programming, so I may have to get on the list and ask you questions from time to time now.
That'll be fine
All right. Well, I appreciate it, and we'll let you go talk with some people now. You haven't had a chance to do that.
I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you next month as well.
I'm looking forward to it, and what do you have in mind, or do you?
Whatever you want to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about a little bit more about Bash programming.
Okay, and maybe you can come up with some sources where people can find some very rude and crude Bash programs. That would be nice.
Okay.
Because you're talking to a dummy here when it comes to programming, I'll tell you that. I still want to get into it, but I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. So, all right, Bash programming is our next Ed's Tips, and you got to be here the first Wednesday of the month, because I'll be gone the third Tuesday. I'm not here. So, unless you do it and I can catch the archive, maybe Mike can interview you then. But I hope to be the interviewer on that one, because that's going to be a good one. Thanks so much, Ed. Ed Allen has been our guest here, and he has given us a lot of information about regular expressions, switches, and shell programming. So if you guys want to, take off and run with it. And what I'm going to do is take the stage for a minute and talk a little about a field that's very near and dear to me. I have been studying on the Internet a group of folks called Sighted Electronics. They are in on the East Coast. If you want to find out more about their products, they are at sighted.com, and they have something that is just, you know, I'm just absolutely wanting this thing. It is a device that is blind-friendly, and it is using, as its operating system, get this, Debian Linux. And the device is quite expensive. It's about anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000, but it does use Debian, and it still allows people to use to write in Microsoft Word format and some of these other things. But it has a lot of features that would be nice to have. It allows you to get to the shell and do some other things that you can't do with some of the other devices of these types. Basically, these things are personal data assistants for the blind. They're called note takers, and they have been around since about 1988, when a guy named Dean Blasey, who worked for a group called Blasey Engineering, I wonder why, came up with the idea that blind people needed information which was accessible to them in the size of a notebook. And that's why they were called note takers. They were the size of a notebook. And he wanted a set of applications which they could use. These things have evolved. Lots of people have come out with them. Lots of companies have come out with these things. And this particular one that I have my eye on is based with the operating system on Linux, Debian Linux. And so it is really exciting. you can get to the shell and you can operate the thing, and it's kind of neat. And it'll also allow you to use your Linux box or your Windows box when you are visually impaired. So that is the latest and greatest thing I've been doing looking at Linux is looking at this device called a Braille Assistant, or ELBA. And it is available if you want to take a look at the snapshot at cited.com. Let me go over once again how you can certainly get the information we've been giving you this evening. For those of you who are listening at a friend's house, get a pen and paper. We'll give you the information about our website here, and you can get the archives of the program this evening if you missed Ed's tips tonight. It was a wonderful discussion about programming in the shell. We are at www.kclug.org, and you enter that, and then if you want to hear the live webcast, you add the following after the ORG: /live.com/. Now be careful, M3U. You have to use it just that way. It is not MP3, it is M3U. I'll do this again. We are at www.kclug.org:live:. I'll wait a minute so you can erase there. So this is after the org. Then we have /live.m3u. And I'm doing that also for Windows users who want to learn more about Linux, okay? Because once you learn about Linux, you're going to enjoy it. Now, if you wish to respond to us, here is the IRC channel. Go to freenode.org. Anytime you hear me say the word dot, that's a period. freenode.org, all one word, all lowercase. Then when you get onto the server, join KCLUG. That's all one word, and you should be on, and we'd like to hear from you. It is 37 minutes past the hour in the central time zone. Let's take a short standby in case folks need to identify who they are. This is the Kansas City Linux Users Group. My name is Craig Martin. My engineer this evening is Mike Morgan. Mike is working with folks. There's a whole group of conversations and show and tells going here in the room. Let me tell you where we are. We are in the main library in the Kansas City, Missouri main library, which is at 14 West 10th Street. Our meetings occur every first Wednesday, like this evening. Pardon me. And third Tuesday of the month. We are no dues. We do not charge dues. And you come with your Linux laptop and you set it up and you show what you have for us and we talk to you about it. And if you're a new person here with Linux, there are plenty of us around who can give you help. Kansas City Linux User Group website is KCLUG, www.kclug.org. You can find book reviews there. You can find previous talks. You can also find archived KCLUG meetings. And LUG is just the LUG part of KCLUG. And LUGs, by the way, are Linux User Groups. So that's the name of the website. just kind of in a quiet area here as various conversations going on with some of us, folks around me here. One of these times I'd like to find someone who knows quite a bit about NOPICS and how to start it and how to use it. I think beginners would appreciate knowing if they purchase a laptop and they want to do a dual boot type environment, they would be able to slip a CD in the drive and boot to Linux, see if it would run. Ah. And we're going to have someone here. We're still looking for somebody that wants to, they can. Now you have to have, okay, and Chris is down the table, so I'll just ask him. He doesn't have to get up. If you, basically, Chris is saying that we can pop the disk, the CD in, and it will run. That almost. Okay, and they're beginning to. Okay, that almost says, so it's almost like you're getting into BIOS then. Okay, so they're discussing it here, and I will continue to talk to you while they decide what the best course is of operating NOPICS here. What I'm wondering is what they basically said was that you'd have to get into BIOS in order to tell the system to boot from the CD-ROM. Why couldn't we do this? Could we tell the system when we get it to first look at the floppy drive, if it has one, then look at the CD, then look at drive HDB? They're still talking about. And we're getting. And he's trying to get. Mike is trying to help us get someone here. Sorry for the slight delay. This is the Kansas City Linux User Group, and we're talking. There we go. We've got someone on board here.
Hello.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Well, actually, it's Kurt.
Kurt, I remember talking to you. Kurt is the gentleman who had the wonderful description, the wonderful projector.
Yeah, the MIV-TV.
The MIV-TV thing. That was real cool, Kurt. I remember that. That was the first night I was here. I'll never forget that.
Okay, well, I guess I'm stuck here at the mic because somebody's trying to figure out how to get into their system BIOS to change their boot order.
Well, that's all I need to find out. If the system looks, if we slip a CD in the drive, and we've got it so that the system will look at, say, the floppy first and then the CD, once it finds the CD, then it'll go ahead and boot to NOPICS, correct?
Yeah.
Now that's we don't need the other information. All we need to do is find out if it's going to boot to boot to the CD, then it will boot NOPICS. And you have to have a bootable CD-ROM, right? Some CD-ROMs aren't bootable.
Yeah.
Okay, so it has to be a bootable CD-ROM, and you have to be able to put the CD-ROM in the order of the boot up order. Probably I'd stuff it in right after the floppy. Of course, now a lot of new laptops don't have floppies, do they?
No.
They have They have a CD-ROM plus a stick drive. And so, you know, you'd go.
Most people with at least desktops, their machine's already going to be set up to boot first from the floppy, then from the CD-ROM. Then from the hard disk. Now, probably the only time you're going to find something different is when somebody's went in and sort of tweaked their machine to try and speed up the boot process. Sometimes they'll move their hard disk up to the very first boot device.
Oh.
And that's where they get in trouble with a live CD.
Well, and I would have a problem with that. I don't think that's a good thing to do. It should always boot from the floppy and then from the CD if it's got them. I'm sorry. I just think it should always look at that because, you know, it's just that gets you out of a lot of emergencies a lot quicker.
Yeah, well, your system BIOS is always available so that when you first boot your machine, you can just go into the BIOS and change the boot order if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware of that, but I wasn't sure. I was mainly interested to find out, you know, so you just put the CD in, and if it's in the boot process, it NOPX comes right up and runs. What is on a NOPX disk? How much of Linux is on there? You obviously don't have GCC. You just have some of the basic utilities that Linux would normally use, some kind of a kernel and some other things. What comes on?
Well, you're probably talking to the wrong guy. To give you in-depth information on NOPX, but I will admit to trying numerous bootable live CDs. NOPX is one of them. PC Linux OS is another one. Ubuntu is very popular right now. There's a version called KUbuntu that has the KDE desktop, whereas the Ubuntu has the GNOME desktop. There's Slack.
Yeah, for Slackware and
Yeah, it's a live Slackware. There's and he's got some special editions such as the Kill Bill version of Slacks, which I find rather humorous.
Tell us a little about Kill Bill. Is it something you can talk about on the?
I suppose so. It has the if anybody's ever seen the wallpaper with the three little penguins in the middle of it, well, somebody's taken that probably with the GIMP and they've edited it. And so one of the penguins is, or each of the penguins is dressed like one of the characters in the movie Kill Bill. And other than that, that's probably all that, you know, they've really done to modify that particular live CD.
Uh-huh.
Anybody that's a Linux fan probably gets a bit of a giggle out of the phrase Kill Bill, however.
Oh, okay. They probably do. Well, I thank you, Kirk, and that's a pretty good synopsis of what NOPX does. If you're going to buy a laptop and you want it to be a dual boot system, you want to try NOPX. And, of course, if you want to get the NOPX, you can go to nopx.de, I believe, and you can find it there. Is that correct?
It might be nopper.net.
Nopper.net. Yeah. K-N-O-P-P-E-R.net?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Klaus Nopper is the original live CD guru.
Now, for this, you'd want to have the NOPX that would go with your system. If you were going to do Slackware, you'd want to get Slacks. If you were going to do Debian, you'd want to get the one that would go with that one. If you were going to do Red Hat, there's probably, you know, White Hat or whatever the version is for Red Hat. Is that, or does it really matter?
Well, the easiest way to try and answer that question would be to just have anybody that's interested in live CDs go to, I believe it's frozentech.org, which has a list of Linux live CDs. And if I got that URL incorrect, the easiest way to locate FrozenTech is to just run a Google search for Linux Live CD, and it'll be the first thing that pops up.
Okay, we can certainly do that. That'll be kind of a fun thing to do.
That'll give people a list of easily 100 different Linux Live CDs. I'd say more than 50% of them are based or originated out of the NOPX live CD.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just people, you know, basically developing their own live CD distribution.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are pretty cool. Some of them don't work for beans. Some of them need some serious work. And then others are quite elegant and very finished-looking products.
Great. So that would be the best way for somebody who's thinking about Linux to do it, is just download and burn one of these things and try it out.
Yeah, absolutely, and take it to, you know, burn yourself a couple of copies and just wander over to Best Buy or Circuit City, and when nobody's looking, pop it in the CD-ROM drive and boot the machine up and see how well it works on, you know, whatever laptop or machine you're considering buying.
Yeah, and I hope they haven't decided to boot these things to the C drive. And not put it on the CD-ROM. That would be kind of a bummer. It wouldn't surprise me that some of these stores do something like that, so you'd probably have to do it in the individual store just to see if it worked.
Well, most of the salesmen at Best Buy will tell you what the escape sequence is to get out of their little demo thing they run on their machines.
Ah, okay.
So they can get to a desktop.
That would be great.
And I know Circuit City and Office Depot, they don't have any problem with me coming in there with live CDs. Micro Center doesn't have a problem with it. You know, shoot. In fact, make yourself a couple copies, go into the store, boot it up, check it out, see that you like it, and then forget to take the CD out of the drive and just wander off.
Just leave it there and let people see what it's doing.
Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah, well, and you know, people need to be aware that Linux is a new operating system for them, and that it will do anything that Windows will do, and probably good or more better, as my friend in Iowa calls it. I was just telling the folks a minute ago about there is actually a commercial product for the blind now that uses Debian Linux as a platform, an operating platform, and I've just got my eye on it, and hopefully I can afford one or finance one or whatever I can do to get one. And this thing has Linux on it. It'll write all of the standard Microsoft formats, Word, that kind of thing, but it's based on Debian Linux, and I just thought that was so cool, because it's got a 32 meg RAM and a 32 meg flash RAM, and that's all it needs when you're dealing with Linux. Doesn't need much. And it's a 4-pound package in a very sturdy aluminum case, and it's got 30 refreshable braille dot patterns, and gosh, I'm just looking at it almost every day, trying to finagle me a way to get one.
So, luck with that.
Kirk, thank you so much. Appreciate it. This is the Kansas City Linux Users Group.
There would be standard latitudes where, like, reference times were.
Oh, that's almost like a time.
Okay, hopefully that. Is there anybody in the room that knows a lot about Cron?
I do. Not my wristwatch.
You set your watch to GMT and just do everything.
Yeah, Cron is the command line where you can set up Linux to do. It's kind of the command line task monitor, if you will, in Linux. Like cron jobs. Yeah, cron tab. Anybody know about cron tab?
Just tell everybody what your UTC adjustment is, and, you know, yes, I'm negative 3.75.
Well, we'll look around for that at another time. There's Oren. He's come. Most of the diehard folks, Mike and Ed, and some of the other folks are here.
Australia and India are both on half-hour time. In other words, it's not something 50.
The time is 54 minutes past the hour. I'm Craig Martin. My engineer is Mike Morgan, and beside me is a little Shure microphone that feeds audio to the PowerBook that Mike uses with FreeBSD loaded, and he has an IceCast encoder, and that feeds the KC Lug server, which is a nice cast server, goes up, and you're hearing my voice at the following port, www.kclug:8000/live.m3u. Now be careful, M3U, not MP3. It's M3U. And if you want to join us on IRC or IRC and IRC us a little bit, maybe you don't like what we're talking about tonight. Maybe you're IRC'd about that. The place to go is freenode.org, freenode.org. And when you get on the server, join space number sign KC Lug or KCLUG, and that'll put you on the IRC chat with us. Very, very exciting discussion this evening with Ed Allen, one of the probably the premier command line guru here, the shell guru here at the KC Lug. If you want more of Ed's advice, go to the site and look up Ed's tips. Click on that if you're using a GUI. I was about to say Windows, but that's a dirty word here. Not really. I'm just teasing. But if you're interested in more of Ed's advice, why show up on the website and look at Ed's tips. And there's just a lot of neat stuff. We've also got archived meetings. If you missed, if a friend of yours has missed this meeting and you want him to know about regular expressions, there is a directory, and you just go over there and you put your MP3 player on the site there, and away you go. Winamp or something. Freeamp is what you'd use with Linux. Freeamp. And in the case of Debian and Red Hat, you can do an apt-get space install space freeamp. So that's, and we've got somebody joining us, I think.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
That's Mike. Hello, Mike. Good to hear you.
Thanks
for bringing the equipment this evening. And what have you got for us tonight?
Well, I was thinking that was a wrap. I thought maybe you might want to take a break. You've been working awfully hard for quite a while now.
Well, if I can get to, do they have a Coke machine here?
Yes, I believe they may have. Well, why don't we take time out? Why don't you sign off, and we'll give the folks at home a chance to rest, and we'll be back in, say, 15 minutes.
That sounds good, and with that, this is the Kansas City Linux Users Group. My name is Craig Martin. We'll be back in 15 minutes.
Wow. Oh.